It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Morena, Mayor Phil Goff, how are you?
Atamaria, Rachel. I am good, thank you. Warm night last night.
Yeah, very.
Yeah, I woke up thinking, oh gosh, when's the cold weather going to come back? Never ask for what you might be given.
Exactly.
No, well and truly back into work, unfortunately, third week back. So all of those memories of the beautiful Christmas New Year period starting to fade. you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. Looking forward to Auckland Anniversary Day on Monday, then have a little mini break if that's
Then Waitangi Day. So exactly. we've still got a third of summer to enjoy.
Exactly. Hey, we've got some big topics to chat to you about this morning. We want to talk a little bit about Wellington's response to the housing crisis. That we've been talking about housing a lot with you recently because it's kind of an ongoing issue. Also a wee bit about rising AT fares and LGBTQI homelessness in Auckland. So let's start with the housing thing. We're seeing a lot in the news at the moment that nurses and teachers and people of a similar economic demographic are really struggling to buy houses in the cities that they work in. And Wellington is coming up with this system of creating buildings to sell to people of this sort of economic bracket. Do you think we could be implementing a similar strategy in Auckland?
Well, it's an interesting initiative. It's developed by the developers themselves, two guys called Ian and Alex Castles. And their principle is to take office blocks and convert them to apartments. They're planning to produce about 500 apartments in this way. And the deal that they have with Wellington City Council is that the council takes out a 15-year lease on the buildings, mm-hmm. and then acts as actually the property operator. It lets the flats out at close to the market rate. So they're at pains to say this is not being rate subsidised. I think it is quite a good idea. Mm-hmm. Wellington is an even more expensive city to rent in than Auckland, according to Trade Me. It has the highest weekly medium rent in the country. And council's answer to this in part is to say, well, look, we've found these two developers, they're not trying to, break the bank with what they're charging for their conversion of the office space. They're taking a socially responsible approach and we're working in with them. So I'm keeping that under close scrutiny, and if we got a developer in Auckland that was similarly civic-minded and said, look, we're not going to do this at the top of the commercial rate, but we'll give you a reasonable deal, that's something that we could look at. That doesn't mean to say we're doing nothing at the moment. Of course, mm-hmm. the best thing to do with a rental crisis is to make sure we've got enough houses and apartments to go around. And we're now consenting houses at five times the rate that we were a decade ago, so we're close to 15,000 a year. We're continuing to develop our pensioner rental housing stock through Haumaru, with another 40 apartments due to be opened in the next 2 months out at Henderson Valley Road. We're pushing government for more social housing, and of course we're working through Housing First, where we've already housed 1,000 homeless people, half of them kids.
So one thing I find quite interesting about this is, as you were saying, it kind of is a socially conscious developers who have kind of made this happen in Wellington, and in some ways it sounds like we sort of need to wait for somebody to take that initiative up here. I know, as you were saying, there are other initiatives going on, but it sounds kind of like it could be maybe a chance for some sort of new kind of social housing happening in Auckland, or anywhere really, looking at this with a kind of the council acting as your sort of landlord or something like that. Is this something that you think would be worth pursuing, maybe beyond just having social, having a private developers being in charge and the council taking over, having a kind of localised state housing system?
Yeah, that's incredibly expensive, and no council around the country does that. I mean, the only thing we've got is legacy pensioner housing, and unfortunately, Mayor John Banks sold most of that off in Auckland City. Otherwise, we would be playing an even bigger role there. But if we were to act as a developer, the average apartment to build is going to cost you $500,000 or more. Average house, probably close to $750,000. And we've got this incredible shortage of capital and a debt-to-revenue ratio we've got to meet. And, you know, council quite properly is saying, well, our first priority for investing capital is in our transport network. Our second priority is in providing the infrastructure for housing development to go ahead. Our third priority, not necessarily in that order, is the infrastructure we need to clean up our environment. To embark on a brand new area where we'd have to raise literally, you know, probably billions of dollars to do it on a large scale just isn't practicable for council and never has been. It's the government that provides the social housing, and that's why we're encouraging them to continue in that role. And to be fair to them, you know, they will be providing another 3,500 state houses in Auckland over this 3-year period. But, you know, the truth is we probably need even more than that.
Well, speaking of transport, should we talk a little bit about AT now? So the fares for AT are rising again, and there was a paper considered by Auckland Transport Board in December noting that the impact on patronage from the bus and train increases would be 555,000 trips fewer than if fares go unchanged. This isn't great in a climate crisis.
I really challenge those figures. They said that last time, and yet in the last year we've had an 8% increase in patronage, which is one of the highest levels ever in increase in public transport patronage. AT itself has made this decision, so it's weighed up the facts that they and the goals that they have to meet, and what are their goals and our goals? Well, it's to keep fares as low as possible while expanding the frequency and the quality of public transport. If you want to look at how you can get more people onto public transport, probably the most important factor is the frequency of the service so that it's convenient, and the second most important is the quality and the safety, and the third most important is the fares. Now, when you say the fares are going up, only half of the fares are affected, so half are totally unaffected, and those fares that are going up on average between 3 and 10 cents a trip. The average fare increase across the board actually represents 3 cents a trip. Now, that's not going to discourage anyone from using public transport. 3 cents a trip on average, you know, and yet, you know, we already subsidise public transport, and rightly so. The commuter pays about 43% of the real cost of his or her trip. But at the same time, government council make big savings from mode shift because it helps to ease congestion, it reduces carbon emissions, and it reduces pollution. So that's a perfectly appropriate subsidy. But the more that we put into subsidising the fares, the less money that we've got to improve the frequency and the quality of the trip. So we've got to find a balance between those things.
That being true, I suppose an issue that perhaps some people are flagging is that this is the third increase we've seen in a short period of time, in about since about 2017. And I guess one thing that people seem to be a little bit alarmed about is, when do the increases stop? Is there going to be a cap for this? As you're saying, 3 cents doesn't sound like very much, but on top of other increases, are we going to see maybe a levelling out at some point?
Well, each year the cost of fuel goes up. Each year the cost of the wages goes up, and we're putting millions more into that because, frankly, bus drivers have been underpaid given they have to work split shifts, etc. So if you freeze the fares and the costs go up, then the deficit grows each year, and that comes out of what we're able to do in increasing the frequency of fares. And, you know, the average driver would say in the private car, well, you know, I've got to pay extra fuel costs each year. My costs go up each year. Cost of everything goes up each year. This is a very small percentage increase that won't have, I don't think, it won't have any significant impact on the usage. What will have the impact on usage is the more that we can produce the sort of projects we're doing with CRL, where we're spending, you know, $4.3 billion to double the capacity of rail. But you can't keep spending money and not raise the money from which you can make that investment. So most of the investment comes through council and the Crown. We only recover less than half of the cost of that from the commuter, but the more we subsidise the commuter, the less money we've got available to expand the network of transport and to make it as attractive as possible. So, look, I'm not expecting that I'm going to get a whole lot of complaints from people on the basis of an average fare increase of 3 cents, and even if you're paying at the highest end, 10 cents, that's our lowest denomination coin. Look, at a bit... Keeping the fares reasonable is something that we're absolutely committed to do, but we've got to balance out those other factors, and I think people understand that. They know our costs go up, and they know that, you know, nothing in life is free. Somebody's got to pay for it, and somebody's got to make a contribution.
Well, let's talk a little bit about our third and last topic this morning. So LGBTQI homelessness in Auckland, and it's great to hear that Auckland Council and Rainbow Youth have launched a $150,000 pilot program to help prevent people in the LGBTQI community from sleeping rough. So what is this pilot program going to look like, Phil?
Yeah, well, what we know about the homelessness is that it affects people disproportionately. It affects Maori people disproportionately, Pacifica people. But another group that we might not have anticipated is that of all the young people that are affected by homelessness, the biggest and the most the disproportionate impact is on Rainbow Youth. Young people still living at home, struggling as they come to terms with their gender identity or their sexual orientation. Families sometimes not able to cope with that. Bad family atmosphere, kids end up out on the street and they end up incredibly vulnerable. And they're already vulnerable because, you know, if you look at the suicide rates, you know, again, those are disproportionate for young people in this category. So not all the social agencies dealing with homelessness know how to best to deal with Rainbow Youth. So it made sense for us to have the organisation Rainbow Youth itself take on a housing support worker that will help in a number of ways. I mean, the first thing, you know, they will try and do is to work through, might be working through social agencies, or it might be working through sympathetic pastors to try to restore the relationship that might have led the young person to have to leave home. So that's a good preventive measure. Secondly, when they are out of home, they need an agency that understands their needs and can help connect them with agencies that provide housing. And thirdly, I mean, it's just making sure that when people come in off the street and they are Rainbow Youth, that they can get a sympathetic hearing, they can get the best advice possible, and they can get the support that they need to get into stable and secure housing. So, you know, there's not one size fits all in the homelessness area. This was an area of particular need. And working with Rainbow Youth, I think this is a good initiative that can help improve the situation in that regard.
I think it's really, really positive to see, and a nice note to finish on as well. So thank you very much, Phil, for your time this morning. It's always great to speak to you.
Thanks, Rachel. Look forward to catching up next week.
See you next week.
Okay, cheers.
Bye.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goff.